Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by ADHD functional fitness coach Amy Barlow. Me and Amy have a lot in common, including ADHD diagnosis, the need for approval, and giving ourselves very strict rules with fitness and eating, and it was amazing to be able to explore this with her. I really hope that you benefit from this episode and enjoy our giggles along the way.
Hello.
Ah, I can see you. Oh, you've got your nice new pink hoodie on. I saw that on your Instagram.
You. I walked into the kitchen this morning. My partner was like, "That's very pink."
There is nothing wrong with that. I think that's a compliment.
I know, right? And it's such a soft, like a cozy hoodie. So
it looks lovely. This is my bottle. So you know, you can't get too much pink. So yeah, I'm super excited to chat to you because I found your Instagram. I don't know how long ago it was. Oh, it was from the ADHD chatter podcast that you did.
Amazing.
And then I was like, oh my God, like everything you were saying, I was like, wow, this is really resonating. So I was like, okay, I have to have a chat with you on the podcast, even if it's just for my own sake, not for the listeners, which to be honest with you, lately it's just been like, I need to talk to that person because I want to have a chat. And this is a good excuse.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I guess to start, do you want to kind of just give us an introduction into who you are and what you do?
Yeah, go for it. So hi, everyone. My name is Amy and I am an online wellness coach and I specialise in supporting ADHD women, mainly in the more sort of corporate and entrepreneurial space to create a healthy balance between wellness and life and also managing their ADHD symptoms. So basically getting them away from that toxic hustle culture, doing everything as an overachiever to creating that sustainable balance where they're actually working in alignment with their ADHD. And that's pretty much me.
Amazing. And I'm super excited to chat to you because I know you also have a very keen interest in fitness and like over the past maybe 6 or 7 months, I basically, just to give you a bit of background, I was really struggling with anorexia. I've had it for 14 years, but I relapsed maybe 3 years ago now. And only like in the last 6 or 7 months have I actually like really been coming on in my recovery. And within that time, I've one, changed the way that I work out. Like I've always been into exercise, but through the anorexia, it was very like driven on the aesthetics and what I looked like. And I then found CrossFit, which I know we've been chatting a little bit about, that's transformed my mentality. And I'm going through the diagnosis process for ADHD, which I just feel has opened like so many doors of things. I've been like, I don't understand why I do this. And now I'm like, oh,
actually, you know,
yeah. And also, I think I can say this because I think that the podcast will be out by the time it's official, but I'm going self-employed. So I feel like this timing is so good to speak to you.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
I'm on the course.
Exactly. So where shall we start? I guess because it feels like there's a lot to chat about. Maybe we could start by talking about your own experience of ADHD and how that kind of impacted you and your journey with that.
Yeah, no, thanks, Han. Yeah, 100%. So a bit of background, it was not as, you know, a lot of people are getting diagnosed later in life. So I had a diagnosis when I was 11.
Okay.
But that didn't, people have said to me so many times, you know, oh, you had diagnosis when you're 11, lucky you. And it's kind of like, yeah, 100%. It was great to have that awareness. But I was actually diagnosed with ADD. Which now, obviously, later on in life, understanding that that's not if there's a sort of a controversial opinion as to whether that is a separate diagnosis in itself, because ADD is kind of a stereotype of a classic woman that's got ADHD. So there's okay. that kind of combination of, yeah, there's a big conversation in that, I guess. But yeah, so I found out when I was 11, and I got put into different education, private education to support that, but it just to get extra time with exams and stuff. But there was not really an understanding apart from, oh yeah, she needs extra time. There was no mm-hmm. understanding as to, there was a lot of things that I was doing in my life, and mainly towards the emotional dysregulation side of things, that really I didn't link to my ADHD, nor did my parents, which is another conversation, because neither of them are diagnosed with either autism or ADHD, but I'm pretty sure there's a spectrum going on between the both of them there. So it was a really interesting one, because throughout my life, I, even though I knew I had it, I was like, oh, I just struggle with concentration, and I, you know, I need extra time, and I don't process things in the same way. And then it was like this eye opener to me having these meltdowns, these like severe meltdowns, and, you know, my parents just being like, we genuinely don't know what to do with you. We don't understand. Mm. And then it all made sense later on in life. And I guess then that ties into other things where it makes sense about the overachieving. I was in the West End when I moved to London when I was 21, so I'm 29 now. And it was this whole facade, this whole image, pageants, the lot, just really masking everything. And it's really only been in the last 2 years that I have started to address it and understand it a bit more.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make about, like, oh, people saying, oh, lucky you, you know, you got that diagnosis when you were younger. Because even if you had the diagnosis, I think the only the awareness that ADHD presents so differently in women, I feel like that's only been the past few months, maybe the past year. Like, so really, you haven't had the right support because nobody's known how to provide that support.
You're so right. No, you're so right. And I think that's the thing. It's like you've just got this identification that mm-hmm. was a part of you, but that it's completely different. Like the set of needs, it was like I got diagnosed, and then the awareness, I guess, to how it presents itself in women wasn't there. So it was lumped with this mm-hmm. diagnosis, and then that was kind of it, apart from the extra time and that, because, you know, I'm sure you're the same, well behaved in school, not really many issues in that department, so then you just kind of slip through the cracks a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that was the thing that shocked me, when because it was my therapist that said, I think that you potentially have ADHD, and I think that's the reason you've developed an eating disorder, in order to sort of suppress the ADHD. Because what I found is over the past few months, whilst I've been weight restoring, I've been really struggling with like really chaotic thoughts, like intrusive thoughts, imposter syndrome, like loads of things like that. And I just put it down to me being a perfectionist and me being a high achiever and things like that. And then she explained a bit more about ADHD, and I was like, but that's not ADHD. ADHD is like, you know, not being able to sit still and being fidgety and like speaking over people and things like that. And it really was an eye opener. But what something really interesting that you said there was the fact that you did like pageants and stuff like that, and that you were masking. And I think that seems so interesting to put yourself in that position. Or I'm not saying you put yourself in that position, but the fact that you kind of did that, because I can imagine being a pageant queen, you have to mask anyway. But being somebody with ADHD, you have to mask in everyday life. So I can imagine that really amplified those feelings of, I've got to be a certain way to be approved by society.
Yeah, it's pretty mad when you look at it like that. And I think it displays itself in other ways now as well, where even, you know, today, for instance, so obviously I'm very active on social media. I've built up a following for the past 6 years, you know, really grinded it out to get to that point. But I would be lying if I said it was done in a healthy way. I really developed like a social media addiction and an obsession, which is obviously another conversation for us to have. But my mentor this morning was like, you're taking a week off Instagram to focus on your program that you're building. And I was like, but I don't need to. She's like, Amy, you're so focused on the vanity metrics. And it's really hard because obviously as a coach and not as I'm in between like an influencer and a coach at the moment, but it's really hard because it's not that, you know, having a big following is a bad thing, but she just wanted me to kind of take that self-worth away from that. And even today, I'm like, this is awkward. I'm really uncomfortable because you have such a draw to go onto the app and go on and be so present on there. So, you know, it even displays itself now in other ways.
Yeah. And I guess, how do you manage that? Because I think it's something that a lot of people, you know, whether they've got a big following or a small following, we get so much from kind of the reaction that we have on social media. You know, if you put a post on and let's say you've worked really hard on it, it doesn't get the kind of review that you wanted, or you kind of take that, I do anyway, as a personal attack. And often it's not that, it's the algorithms, or it's just not landed how you expected it to. But how do you sort of work through that mentally to make sure that you are looking after yourself when you are obviously a big part of your job is on social media?
That's such a good question, Hannah. And I think that, if again, I'd be lying if I said I had it all figured out. Sometimes me and my partner, because he's a coach as well, and he's actively trying to grow his audience. So it's very, we have to sometimes become aware that we can be quite toxic, where I'll walk into his office and I'm like, I'm in his office now, but I walked in, I'll walk in and be like, my post has done shit. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, Aim. And like, and he'll do it to me as well. And it is like that, you just get yourself like warped in it. So I think for me, I'm way better than I was. So that means that there is an improvement. It is working on that detachment of being like, oh, you know, it's not on me, it's the algorithm, or it's the post not being seen. And I've noticed that my reaction is better to that, my acceptance is better to that when I'm in a better headspace myself. So if I'm dysregulated and I feel like there's a lot of things out of control in my life, then the one grasp that I have is my engagement on Instagram. And if I can't have that, then, you know, then I'll freak out. So that's still not necessarily, you know, a solution. But I'd say that another thing that's helping me currently is working on really distinguishing who I'm trying to target through my social media and my messaging, because it's almost then, you know, I have full confirmation and clarity that the only reason why I'm posting is to target a certain audience. And if I'm making money off that because it's, you know, for my business, then I guess the engagement doesn't matter as much. But it's when you're not, you know, you're not getting the engagement and you're not getting the reach to the right people is when it can be quite frustrating.
I really like that though. And I think that's definitely something I have tried to take more of an approach to, is kind of looking at it from a bird's eye view rather than just like a very focused, specific angle. And it's really interesting what you say about kind of like when everything feels out of control, and kind of you don't have a grasp on anything, that you lean into social media because you feel like you can control that more. And if I don't know, I think you mentioned on the podcast that you did before, but for me, that's definitely where like disordered eating and my eating disorder came in, was I can't control. And I don't want, as I say this now, I don't want this to sound like I kind of had this figured out. This is something that has taken 14 years to figure out and I've just kind of got it. But I'm so passionate about sharing it because I'm like, if I say it and then it twigs for somebody else, that's amazing. But I've figured that when I am in a position like feeling completely out of control, and that a lot of that is linked to the ADHD, rather than like feeling like I can kind of grasp life, I'm like, okay, what logical things do I know? I know that being small, being lean, being muscular, being physically fit in the gym, they're things that people admire. So that's what I need to do. And I was diagnosed with anorexia, but for me, it never landed well. I was like, I just don't get anorexia. Like, not I don't get it, but I've not got this desire to lose like a lot of weight. I've got a desire to have this particular physique and be regimented and be perfectionistic in the gym. So it's never really worked for me. But now that I realize, oh, actually, like I lean into that when I feel out of control in my life, because that feels like a constant and something where I know is going to be right. Maybe I don't actually need that anymore because I've understood where that's coming from. So it's really interesting that you were saying you have a similar sort of thing with social media.
Yeah, because it's, you're so right. And I think it's fascinating because then it begs the question as to whether, I mean, I'm sure there's people way more qualified than me that can justify this, but whether like conditions like anorexia are comorbidities of ADHD as well as OCD, as well as bipolar, because there's so many conditions that are connected. But it sounds like to you that maybe ADHD is the root cause, and then, you know, the tendencies are classed as more anorexia, or but it's more done in a way, like you said, where you didn't want to be skinny. It was more to do with, you know, wanting to have a very specific type of physique.
Yeah, to gain the approval of others, because in my mind I was like, I have no idea how to get people to like me, because I don't know who I am, I don't know what to do, which I think is where the masking comes in.
Oh, and this goes back to the pageant, you know. I maybe in my head somewhere along the line thought that I needed to be this blonde haired, I don't know, person, this fitness influencer that everybody, Barbie, kind of CrossFit Barbie, to be approved in life. And, you know, that's what I thought needed to be done to be accepted. And it's scary, because then when, you know, things happen, like I had surgery at the start of this year, because I have endometriosis, and I've found that every time I've had some sort of surgery, I've really had like an identity shift and a bit of a struggle with control, because it even amplifies to you more that the things that you're using to kind of cope, like exercise, you know, I've had to accept that I am no longer the person that is the CrossFit influencer that everybody knew online, because my body can't handle that anymore. So then that's another round of acceptance to find who is Amy without that label.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did you go about that? Because that sounds, I think, unpinning your identity when it is like heavily reliant on things that are almost, you know, if you were, I don't know, something that wasn't accepted by society, obviously, like, detaching yourself from that would be very difficult. But I feel like, you know, it's something that you are completely leaving behind, because it's not sort of seen as a positive thing in society. But I think the struggle with things like excessive exercise, disordered eating, you know, whether bodybuilding competitions, that sort of thing, is they're so glorified and normalized, but there's so much disordered behavior behind it. Until somebody's in that position where they see how much it's impacting you, they're like, come on, you know, why aren't you doing that anymore? Because, you know, wasn't that really positive?
That is such a like a powerful statement, because I think I posted something, and I think you may have interacted with it a couple of days ago, which was talking about toxic healthy habits that I thought were healthy, but they were actually toxic. And it is a really slippery slope, because, you know, when you're in that world and you're in that environment, like I was in the London fitness scene for nearly 10 years, and I was around people all the time. I used to be around people in the CrossFit box that I was training at. Even last year, this guy, I remember, and even like from a male perspective as well, this guy, I remember, his name was Ed, and he would train like twice a day, three times a day in the CrossFit box. And I remember saying to my partner, because he got paired with him once, and my partner was literally dying, because this guy like trains like he's in a competition every single day. And I said to him, I was like, does this man not have a job? Does this man like, and it's not until you take a step back, especially this is something you'll probably be able to relate to, Han, when you're self-employed, is that, you know, your focus and your brain power is a lot of the energy that's spent in terms of your day to day. And I remember just from the sheer volume of training that I was doing, and because I was in that environment where I was like, yeah, let's go in every single session and absolutely smash it, that I couldn't even like deal with day to day tasks that I was doing because of that reason.
Yeah, I think it becomes so difficult, doesn't it? And people don't understand the impact that can have. And I think it's also, you know, it's really hard as well when you, as an outsider, you'll look on at somebody's life and, you know, maybe that guy at your CrossFit gym and be like, God, I wish I was as fit as him, and I wish I could dedicate myself going three times a day. And then actually you take a step back and you think, okay, so this guy is probably struggling with a disordered relationship with exercise. I imagine his job's being affected, his relationships, like his relationship with himself, his mental health is probably being affected. But people don't see that, because all they see is somebody thriving in an area that they're not thriving and dedicating themselves to it. But they don't see that life around them isn't happening. And I think that is something that's very common in people with ADHD. And I think that's why there's such high rates of burnout, because when you find something that you're passionate about and something that fulfills you, you want to give it literally like 125%. And whether that is something that's positive or something that's negative, you know, depends on the person. But I think without the awareness of what you're doing to yourself, like, burnout can happen so quickly. And then you just lead to feeling weak and feeling, you know, oh God, well, I should be able to thrive in this area because I'm, you know, this is my thing, but now I've not got the energy to do it. What the hell is happening to me?
Oh my God, there's so much to unpick there. And, you know, that comes into as well. Obviously, I had an exercise addiction that I've had to like work a lot through, and it's still not entirely there. But also, I think then I transferred that approach into my work and my business, where I put something on my story the other day about it. And I was literally this time last year in Kenya on the trip of a lifetime. It was a client's wedding. Amazing. And I was so petrified to like not work when I was there, and I just it caused a little bit of a rift between me and my partner at the time, and I was just like, why? I'm trying to grow my business, why are you being like this? Yeah. You know, I was responding to DMs when I was on the safari. Like, who does that? Like,
oh my God.
You know, when you just think back to it, and I think this is where it gets really toxic, because, you know, if it's not exercise, like, it's very, some of the things that, you know, we do apply that to as an ADHDer are things that are quite obvious, like eating, work, you know, exercise. But, you know, it's just funny how then I'm like, well, if I work on that, will it be transferred to something else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, what's your experience been with that? Because for me, I know that I have very much a kind of experience over the past 14 years where it's been eating disorder, excessive exercise, then I've been at university and I could just push myself into that, like, then it's gone back to eating disorder, and then, you know, the eating disorder's got slightly better and it's exercise again. And what I've found more recently is, like, thank God, I actually do feel like I'm in a much better place with exercise this time around. But people congratulate that, because, you know, they didn't like seeing the kind of sick, thin, anorexic. But now that they see the lean, muscular, you know, person at the gym, that's great because she looks so healthy. But then, you know, mentally, you're not healthy. So how have you kind of prevented that shift, if you have, into other areas?
So I honestly am still working through that now. Mm-hmm. I think that for me, whether it's too much, I'm still like figuring that out, because I do weekly hypnotherapy sessions.
Oh, and wow.
I find that hypnotherapy, I'm also going to do my training in it as well. Mm. But I do that once a week, and when you're getting into your subconscious and you're dragging up a lot from the past, like, I've realized, and that's another thing to dig into, is that some would beg the question that ADHD is actually a result of trauma as mm-hmm. well. So throughout your life having trauma, and, you know, obviously the neurological side of that as well, then there may be a difference if you saw a neurotypical and neurological brain, but apparently trauma is one thing that does add to that. And I think I'm still very much working through the whole, you know, addiction to something. But I've, from the hypnotherapy sessions and from working with my therapist, she's sort of identifying to me that I am addicted to chaos in my life, so I need some sort of chaos and some sort of drama to kind of like propel me forwards, and that's what it's been all of my life. And, you know, even if it's not addiction wise and working to that capacity, it's going through some sort of catastrophe in my life. Some of it's not, you know, some of it's not being able to control it. Like, I had a situation last year that really threw me off, and it wasn't something that I could control because it was somebody in the family. But I think that just creating that awareness, to having somebody in your corner to sort of say, Amy, I think you're getting a bit too much with this now. Let's rein it back. Or, you know, doing a lot of healing around inner child healing, you know, working on, you know, really nurturing myself and like self-love. And I think it's really funny because you think, again, exercise, these kind of things that you do, they're self-love activities. And I said that to my therapist the other day. I said, well, I get my hair done and my nails are always great. And she was like, Amy, they're just more things to tick off the list. They're just adding to your like perfectionism standards. She said self-love is literally, it's different. So I'm learning to explore that. And like, I think just learning to create an awareness for myself around, it's like somebody, if you had an alcohol addiction, you know, you go out to a bar, you have one or two drinks. If you feel like you're going to be, you know, needing the shots after that and something else, then that's your cue to walk away. So that's how I'm trying to create that awareness in other areas as well.
I think it's really interesting. And I mean, this is not me kind of like minimizing an alcohol addiction in the slightest,
but no, of course.
I think that it's the way that I see it is that if you have an alcohol addiction, you can never drink again. And you don't have to expose yourself. I mean, you might, you know, you have the triggers, like you go out to friends and they're all drinking and stuff. So it's still in your life. But you have to, I find with eating and with exercise, you have to eat and you have to move, whether that is walking up the stairs or, you know, going to a fitness class, you have to do that. So I always think it's really hard because the addiction is something that you need in order to live your life. And it's about finding that balance, which can be so difficult when, you know, if you've never really had that normal, whatever normal is, relationship, it's, you know, what my unhealthy behavior could look like could be completely normal to somebody else. Like, I remember when I was really struggling with my eating disorder, I'd like go for a walk with my mum, but I wouldn't be walking with my mum. I'd be counting the steps and I'd be thinking, oh, how many calories am I burning? And, you know, now I'm going to be able to eat X, Y, and Z because we've been out on this walk, like completely not paying attention to her or the environment or anything. And I'd go home and I'd say to my therapist, oh, you had a great walk with my mum and like blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, you're just lying to yourself because you, yes, you know, that could be seen as something that's self-care to Joe Blogs on the street. But to you, that was still a compulsive thing that you did because you weren't kind of talking to your mum, you weren't taking in the scenery. And I think that is because I've been, you know, questioning for so long, like, how can I develop a normal, like, healthy relationship with exercise when it's been skewed for so long? And I think now I'm in a position where I'm like, no, you can totally have a healthy relationship with exercise. But it's about being honest with yourself. Like, if you're going to the gym and having a good time and really enjoying yourself and seeing the progress, fantastic. But if you're going to the gym and you're feeling really unwell or you don't want to be there, you're really tired and you're pushing yourself regardless, that's probably not healthy. And I think the same with food, you know, you can sit there and you can eat a salad or you can sit there and eat a piece of cake, but it's your mentality around why you're doing each of those that makes it healthy, not the actual food on the plate.
You're so right. And I'm with you on the whole exercise, alcoholism as well, like not diminishing that, but it does create even a deeper level of disorder when you have to do that very thing to survive. And I think, you know, from my perspective as well. So I think a lot of my control and fear, especially around, because I've always questioned, because obviously you have a better understanding of this than I do, but there is that bit of confusion around what is disordered and what isn't, because I've definitely had issues with food like for a long, long, long time, because I have grown up in a household where my parents had disordered eating, and my mum, there's very complex issues there, and I saw that a lot, and I've had to detach from that because it was emotional, it was horrible to have to see, you know, the people that you love abusing their bodies, and that sounds really awful, and I love them to pieces, but that's the reality of it. So I think I almost went too far the other way, where, you know, there has been periods of time where there's been nutrition plans that I've been on that I would be so to the bone with it, you know, but that's definitely got better over time. But I think you're right in, you know, where does that boundary sit? But the exercise thing is a great, you know, analogy of that. If your body is exhausted and you're pushing past that exhaustion point, then that's not okay. And like, I think what I've learned and the way that I've kind of operated this healthier balance with exercise is that if I'm able to exercise and keep that sustainability going and my focus and my performance in my business is also working, then I'm doing something right, because the exercise is helping with that. Because I'm like, which is part of what I do as a job, is I support women to get their exercise regime to a point where it's actually supporting them and their brain and, you know, their focus, as opposed to, like we said about Ed, probably at his desk with a complete brain fog because he can't focus, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's really interesting. So tell me more about kind of working with the women to kind of support their brain and their focus through exercise. How does that work?
Yeah, so I guess it's like a combination of, you know, the exercise, the nutrition, the inner work as well, and the actionable things that they can do. So it's like a big umbrella, but from a specific exercise perspective, how I call it in, you know, the way that I approach it, and something that I think I spoke about on the Chatter podcast, is that, you know, a combination of low dopamine and high dopamine workouts are really important. So because if you think about, and this sometimes helps me to identify, especially with people that do have a little bit of negative approach to exercise, is look at it in its most simple form. You know, if you've got ADHD, you may have a little bit of issue with coordination. So therefore, exercise is going to help with your coordination. You may have hypermobility. So certain types of exercises are going to help with that. But if you do have hypermobility and you over push it, then that's going to flare up your joints and you're not going to want to push through that. So I try and come from a logical standpoint. They're not doing this because I want them to go to the gym and be bored out of their minds doing strength training. I'm trying to put the logic behind it, which sometimes helps for us with our brains. But I think the low dopamine and the high dopamine workouts is just a system that I use, because then they're getting their burst of energy, but then they're having the more calm days as well. Because if you think about how chaotic somebody with ADHD can be, you need to have a contrast with that.
Yeah. And the reason I asked is because I found through starting sort of this new style of training, I mean, it's not all that different to how I was doing before, but I think just because now I have, before it was kind of just a HIIT focus, whereas now it's strength based as well, because I used to power lift. And I found that was great when I was at uni, but who the hell has like 3-4 hours a day to train now? Whereas the stuff that I'm doing now, which I'd say is more functional fitness, it's like you go in, you do it here, you know, either hit some big numbers or you run around for a bit and then you come out and you feel great. But that definitely some days is like more cardio focused, some days it's more strength focused, and I found that it's just helped me feel so much calmer in the gym. And just I think because with the functional fitness as well, there's quite, you know, there's loads of different movements that I'm learning and kind of developing and stuff, and it's almost that like consistent reward, whereas powerlifting was quite slow in terms of the reward because you'd have to wait for ages to see how strong you are. You almost get that sort of PB quite frequently, so it gives you that little stimulus, which I found really helpful in then taking back to my work. You know, I'll go to the gym in the morning and then I feel refreshed and ready for the day, whereas a lot of people will say, God, I don't know how you do that in the morning, I'd be knackered for the rest of the day, whereas I'm like, no, it keeps me going for the rest of the day.
That's really interesting, because I think obviously playing into it with my endometriosis as well, I have to be careful. But some days I have, like, I can't do a really intensive session in the morning. I'll have to wait until around like 9:30 to do an intense session. And if I do a really intense session in the gym, then I'll have to do a lower intensity session the next day, because my body just flares up and reacts to it. And I'll pay for that for a couple of days after, which never used to be the case. I used to be competing in CrossFit all the time.
It's crazy, but I think it just shows you, doesn't it, that like everybody needs to be so kind of unique with the way that they train. And for some people, going to the gym and doing a CrossFit workout might support their ADHD. And for other people, they might need something completely different, which I think that's something so important to highlight, is that, you know, there's so much more research coming out about ADHD and particularly ADHD in women, but I still think there's so many nuances, and from one person to the next, symptoms will vary so much. Which I think I don't think we are, but we want to be careful that we're not getting into a place of being like, oh, well, ADHD in women, you know, shows as extreme people pleasing and perfectionistic behaviours and things like that. Because I'm sure that there are also women that have the more traditional symptoms of ADHD. And we don't want to make it a thing where we're like, oh, no, this is now how ADHD presents. Because I think, you know, we are very much a culture where we like clear categories of things, and you know that's how it is in eating disorder treatment. It's like, if somebody has a particular set of characteristics, they have a particular eating disorder, therefore they're going to get this treatment, and if they don't recover, then it's them that's the issue, not the treatment. So I think, you know, we need to learn from that for all different types of treatments and therapies and stuff, in that, you know, you've got to look at the individual and think about what's impacting them right now and how we can support them.
Yeah, you're so right, Hannah. And I think a classic example is that we're both having a conversation about how you go to a CrossFit workout in the morning and you actually find that really useful for your productivity throughout the day, whereas I have to have a very different approach to it. And I think, you know, like you said, there's always going to be differences in how people work. Like, I've managed to, you know, I speak to some people and they can't sit at their laptop for more than X amount of time, or they struggle, and or they can't do any social media content creation and all of those things, where these are things that I don't actually find that challenging. If I'm in a good workflow on my laptop, I'm fine. But then there's other weaknesses in, or I wouldn't say weaknesses, just challenges in other areas. So yeah, I think just because, you know, there's the stereotype is there, and you're right, I think we're always looking for a diagnosis for something, which is understandable. We're in a society where everything's really aware, but also it's not going to be as textbook as people think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to ask there, like you mentioned about, you know, everybody will have different strengths and challenges and things like that. How do you work with your clients to sort of understand what their strengths and their challenges are, and then I guess how to navigate, because everyone does have their challenges, you know. I hate the fact that people are like, oh, ADHD is a superpower. It's like, well, you know, it can make me good at some stuff, but it can also make me like some stuff really, really difficult.
No, you're so right. And I think, you know, the hardest part about all of what you've just said is that I am currently trying to grow or create, it is technically created, but I'm trying to create something that is a repeatable process for every single client. So I'm wanting to launch it in like a group format, because doing one-to-one coaching, I absolutely love working with people, and I'm looking at going down the more therapeutic route, I think, with a one for one-to-one, because it can be very draining. Energy management for that is really tough. But to answer the question about how I approach it, obviously, like you said, every client is different. I think you can sort of identify early on whether certain characteristics that a client has, it is, you know, if I was to say to you, I could probably pick out three stereotypes of women that come to me that do have ADHD. So for example, if you did have somebody that came to me that was the more, you know, and I've got a lovely client on board that has autism and ADHD, and you have to be very, very clear and concise with how you communicate, because, you know, if you say you're going to do something on one day and then the next day you do it on another day, they often get quite panicky about that. So it's about for them gaining that sort of personality type, or you know, those kind of traits of neurodiversity. I would say that you want to create more calm, and you want to try and get them to rationalize their brain, because they'll obviously, I do WhatsApp support with them, and they'll message me being like, oh my God, this has happened. I'm like, right, okay, what are the actual facts here? How has this actually happened? Is it as big as you think it is? And you need to like create logic to the situation. Whereas you have others that can be, you know, completely different, and they need more support, and they need more sort of belief in themselves. So it really can vary from client to client. But I think just identifying the client's tendencies quite early on, like I can get quite panicky, and I can over dramatize things and overcomplicate them. So with my mentor, she'll be like, it's not that bad, you're fine, you're good, don't worry, it's just literally these steps. And it's not just these steps, let's be fair, there's a lot that goes into it, but just saying that really helps.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think that's a really good point to make, in that it is so unique for everybody. And what you just said there about sort of like the chaos and stuff reminded me, I wanted to pick up on a point you said earlier, in that like you almost feel like you always have to have drama and chaos in your life. And that really is interesting to me, because I remember saying to a friend before, I was going through like a really dark period and was very depressed, and I remember saying to him, like, I just don't feel like I can be bored. I either have to be depressed or really excited. Like, I can't, boredom to me just makes me panic. I'm like, oh my god, like, there's, you know, what's happening right now, because I'm like, no, there needs to be something bad happening, or there needs to be something good. And so that's really interesting that you find something similar in, like, there has to be chaos, or there has to be loads of stuff going on. It's almost like safety in the chaos, which I find personally, it's either safety in the chaos or safety in the depression. And it's like, I'm either shutting off or I'm giving it like every single thing possible and going wild.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, it's funny, because when you start to look at yourself from a bird's eye view, you can start to sort of identify as to, you know, do you speak about yourself to other people like, oh my god, I've always got something going on, or I'm really busy, or this is happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is that your identity? And then you start to question whether that is actually, you know, a part of your coping mechanism, like you said, of the extremities. Because I definitely find that even now I still have high highs and low lows. And I recently moved out of London to Cheltenham. So I no longer live in London anymore. And I was there for 9 years. And even though I shut myself off last year due to going through a dark time as well, I shut myself off to socializing a lot. There was always an option in London to be able to go and do that. I had so many connections, and I've moved mm-hmm. myself out of London now, where I don't really have a lot of connections. And I'm sat here and I run my own business, but that's on my own. And then, mm-hmm. you know, that's when you start to think, oh my God, like, I actually am not as great as I thought I was dealing with not having these extreme periods in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, I think what you said about there, about living in a really quite busy place, is it allows for distraction. You know, I find whenever I go to London, you don't have a minute to stop. And me and my partner once spoke about potentially moving to London, because we've got a lot of friends that live there. And I was like, I don't think I could, because I get such bad FOMO that if I was living in London, I'd constantly have FOMO. Like, even if it was something that was happening at the local pub or something, I'd be like, oh, well, like, that's somewhere that we could go, therefore we should go, not I actually want to go. Whereas I live in Cambridge, and I think that's got a really good mix of, yeah, it's got a good mix of things to do, but also, like, you can just shut yourself away if you need to. And then you don't distract from, you know, if you have a difficult emotion, you know, you kind of work through it. And I think that's really important, rather than being like, oh no, I'm just going to go and hang out with my friends and not think about what on earth is going on in my brain right now.
That just really brought a valid point that I was thinking about then, Han, as well, is that what I really noticed is, you know, through being an extreme burnout, ADHD burnout, what I definitely noticed as well, and, you know, this was definitely very prevalent when I was in London, is that I had completely disassociated from myself, and like, mm-hmm. I abandoned myself. And I think that that's a whole other conversation, but there's also another part where, you know, yeah, we have these high highs and low lows, but the general, like, normal emotions that you're meant to feel, like, sometimes I still find now that when I'm in extreme stress periods and I'm really dysregulated, like, I disassociate from myself and my body and my actual needs. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, coming back into that person has been the hardest thing ever. And I'm still struggling with that now. But I think that's a lot of, you know, very common with the ADHDers, because, you know, you're not actually listening to yourself. You've completely abandoned who you actually are.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's difficult, isn't it, when you don't necessarily know who you are.
Yeah.
That can feel really uncomfortable. So it's like, okay, well, because I don't really have an idea of who I am or what I like, I'm just going to clutch at loads of different things. And then that takes up that space, and you're like, okay, well, this is my thing, or this is my thing. And then you don't have to actually sit with that uncomfortable feeling of, who am I and what do I do? And I think that's definitely something that I'm going through at the moment, because I think we all have identity and we all have labels, and I don't necessarily think that there's a problem with that, because at the end of the day, you know, you're always going to like things and do things. But I think the problem comes is when you have very limited labels. So, like, if I was just like, I'm Hannah, the podcaster and CrossFitter. Like, that I would think was an issue, because you've got two things there. If you lose one of them, that's 50% of you that you've then lost. Whereas if you've got lots of different things, like, oh, I do a podcast, I'm self-employed, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a friend, I've got cats, like, that should have been number one. Cat mom should have definitely been number one. Then if one of them goes, it's not so much of a, holy shit, I don't know what to do with my life now, and then you, like, go into the chaos.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and then that grasps onto the control, where then if you do have those tendencies of disorder, you need that hold on something to just give you that feeling of, oh no, it's all right, I've got this all together, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get the approval from other people, because, you know, particularly if you're thinking about things that maybe you and I would lean into, it's like, I'll lean into work, oh, that's really good because you're in hustle culture and you've got that drive, or, oh, I'll lean into exercise, that's really good, again, you've got drive, or I'll lean into disordered eating, that's really good because you now look great and you're eating healthy and everything. So it's hard when your coping mechanisms are positive things. If I suddenly started drinking 10 pints a day and smoking 50 cigarettes, I think people would be a bit like, everything all right?
This is why it is scary. And, you know, going back to that whole comparison thing, I've noticed that on social media more than ever, I say more than ever, it's probably happened. But when you're in London, like I said, it's very distracting. And I'm almost in the stage of, like, mourning my old life in London. Ooh. And, like, mourning the person that I was. But, like, my therapist said to me the other day, she's like, darling, she's so calm. She's like, darling, you were numb. She's like, everything that you were doing, you were just numb. Like, you weren't. I was just like, you, it was a coping mechanism for you in London. Like, that was just another level. But, you know, and then I look at certain women online that, you know, I think are amazing, but they very much represent who I was. Mm-hmm. And then it's weird because I watch them and I'm almost like in this awkward space of, I miss being the person that you were. But then also when you're telling me that you feel absolutely exhausted all the time, and then I see you doing marathon training and then a CrossFit workout and all of these things, I'm like, girl, I'm just waiting for the day that you burn out. Not in a bad way, but yeah. I can just see it coming. So, and then I'm like, well, no, actually, I'm like, that was me at one stage and that's okay. Mm. But I think it's hard, like you said, to know where the balance is of that, and to not, the immediate moment you feel uncomfortable, to go and do something that you associate as healthy to mask how that feeling comes about.
Yeah. I think what you've just said there as well, like, social media is such a highlight reel, and I get that all the time. If, like, I see somebody that is engaging in disordered eating behaviors or disordered exercising behaviors that I used to, I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, you're looking so great and you're doing all of this stuff. And then I'm like, hold on. I was putting that on social media, pretending everything was fine. And actually, you know, my life was falling apart, but nobody saw that because that was behind the camera. Yeah. So I think often it's like really leaning into having compassion for yourself, but also having compassion for them as well. You know, not getting angry of like, why are you posting that? And, you know, when actually things happening behind the scenes, but like realizing, you know, that could actually be a sign that something's going wrong as well. As like, it's not necessarily a positive.
I find it so fascinating on that note as well about, you know, what you said, if you were smoking 10 packets of cigarettes and, you know, having a whiskey, that people be like, you all right? But, you know, because we see these things as such, put them on a pedestal, you know, think, oh my God, you know, that's a healthy, Amy's doing it in the healthiest way, or Han's doing, you know, she's coping well, she's smashing it. And, you know, it's really hard. And I do think that there isn't a lot of support out there, or as much support as there could be, especially around, I mean, you could probably clarify on the more disordered eating side of things. But I think for me, I don't really know a lot of people that talk openly about toxic exercise culture, especially, like, you know, I was even questioning the other day whether to take Amy Be Fit out of my bio, because I'm not even Amy Be Fit anymore, you know. And it's like, I've still got a lot of audience on Instagram that is this, you know, space that I am now thinking, are these people all right?
Yeah. And that's a really tough thing when you come out of it and you realize, holy shit, the community I've been in, we were all not that great. And actually, I'm worried about us all. Like, that's really hard. But it's one of those things as well that you can't say to somebody, I think you need to, like, you know, do you need some help? Because they're like, no, I'm totally fine. This is really healthy. It's something that you have to realize yourself. Which I guess in that respect, it's kind of just like, you know, giving somebody space for if they do want to talk about it and share it, then, you know, you're there for them. But that's something I've definitely like had to navigate recently, is like a lot of people I'll look at and I'm like, okay, you're really not okay, but like I can't be the one to tell you that, because you're just going to be like, oh no, I'm totally fine. But equally, if you want to chat about it, I'm here.
Yeah, and I think it's that, you know, because even when like my therapist said to me the other day, oh Amy, you know, you're addicted to chaos. And I was like, what? No. I got actually quite defensive off the back of it. And then I sort of left the call, or left the session, almost like questioning myself and, you know, and then questioning whether running a business is the right thing, running all of these things is the right thing. And, you know, then your brain goes to the extremities. I need to go and live in the mountains in Bali and just be at one
more. Amy, this is so funny. This is exactly my thought process last night. Sit you lying in bed like, I can't be self-employed, I'm just going to run away to Bali and live with the turtles.
Honestly, it has questioned my, because sometimes I'm like, why have you signed up for this? Like, this creates more stress. I was googling yesterday like part-time secretarial roles, and there's nothing.
Oh my god, I've been doing that all week.
There's nothing wrong with being a secretary, by the way. If anybody's listening to this, like, great. But my boyfriend was like, Amy, come on now. Like, he didn't mean that there's nothing wrong with that job role, because it's amazing. But he was like, you're worth more than that. Like,
that's not what you're destined to do.
No.
You're doing it because your imposter syndrome is like, oh, girl, you're not good enough for that. So, oh, you're not going to make enough money doing this. Is literally what I've been doing this week, is I've been applying for jobs like that, because my head's like, you're not going to make enough money. And then, you know, only today have I had two people from like the eating disorder circle be like, okay, I want your services. And I'm like, come on, like, have, like, back yourself, like, stop thinking about being stupid. And, you know, you're going to succeed. It's just, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, this is the, like, dichotomy I find, is on one hand, I'm such a dedicated, passionate, motivated person. I have so many ideas. Like, sometimes that's overwhelming. Sometimes I don't know where to turn because I've got so much I want to do. And then you have that devil on your shoulder that's like, I don't think you're going to be able to do that. No, you're not good enough for that. Which is so hard when it's coming from internal. It's not, you know, it's not somebody else saying to you, you can't do that. Because if someone else, like external, says to me, you can't do that, I'm like, well, fuck you, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
But it's really hard when it comes from inside.
It's the, yeah, it is that inner critic and that self-sabotage, and trusting yourself when you're self-employed is like the hardest thing that a lot of people do. And I think, you know, what I am learning to come to terms with as well is that last year I sort of, so I went into the online coaching space, and I wasn't too keen on doing it as like a whole soul thing, because I am a very interactive person. Even though I need space because I get knackered, I do like having that one-to-one connection. Like, it's nice speaking to you today. But so I had a balance between personal training and online coaching. And then the minute I was working with a mentor, and the minute they said to me, you know, you should start coaching ADHD people. And at the time I was like, guys, I'm not an ADHD coach. Like, that is next level. Like, no. And then they were like, no, you're going to coach them to do fitness. And then it was kind of like, I had all of these people coming through the door. There was no structure to it. There was no real set plan or program in place. So I was just coaching these people, obviously, like I would approach it myself. But I had this sort of influx of people, because the minute you put ADHD in your bio, every Tom, Dick and Harry comes out and is like, oh, can you please help me be consistent? And I'm like, girl, that's just like, that I can't help you be consistent. Like, like, you know. And it got to a point where everything went up, and then I had a really big life event happen last year, and just the sheer volume of how I was working, I just burnt out and I crashed, and that all came crashing down. So for me now, my imposter syndrome is coming in, because I am having to trust myself that I can work in a different way to how I have worked previously, and trying to really fight against, like, is trusting yourself in a different way, because, you know, now it's like being specific about who you're working with, not just taking people on for the sake of it, believing mm-hmm. that you're, you know, actually niching down to one specific type of person is going to help. And I think that's where I'm finding the hard part right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because ultimately at the end of the day, I don't know about you, but I want everyone to be happy. And so when someone messages me saying, can I come on your podcast? And I'm like, no, yes, no, actually, no. And that's so hard. But like you say, I think it's backing yourself. It's backing you that your gut instinct knows what's right for your business. And also I think it's really hard. You know, everything that we do when we doubt ourselves, it tends to be because we haven't done it before. And until you've done it, you then can't trust yourself that you're going to be able to do it. Like you said, working in a new way. But then actually what I'm trying to be like is, okay, so you haven't done this specific thing before, but you have done something else before and that worked and that succeeded because of the person you are. So you can move that into this new thing that you're doing. No, it's not exactly the same, but, you know, it's you're still the same person that's going to achieve it.
No, I love that. I really do love that. And associating it to, you know, something, a scenario that you've done it before. So just because mm-hmm. it's a new thing, you can apply that same mentality towards that. And, you know, it's really interesting. So I think when you start to really delve into your ADHD and your needs and address your needs. Oh, sorry. My the standing desk was literally just started like going down. What's going on? When you start to address your needs, I think sometimes then it is even harder, because sometimes I get frustrated. I'm like, I wish I was just the person I was when I was masking. Everything seemed easier then because I didn't have as much like doubt or fear, because now my fear comes into it where I'm like, oh, if I do too much, then am I going to get burnt out? Like, what's going mm-hmm. on here? And you have to almost look at yourself in a different way, which also is another sort of mental battle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very easy to be like, oh, you know, back then I wasn't as emotional. I didn't do this, I didn't do that. But equally, you weren't yourself and you weren't thriving because you were so fucking knackered from trying to be somebody else. So, Amy, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. I don't want this to be the last conversation that we have, because I feel like we have so much in common. Where can people go to find out more about you?
So, at the moment, you can find me on Amy B. Fit.
Watch that space.
Watch that space.
Follow that quickly.
We may be the holistic ADHDer or something, you know. But at the moment, guys, utilise it whilst it's there. Find me on Amy B. Fit. All of my stuff's in my link tree, so if you guys want to inquire and get involved, then there we are.
Amazing. It's been so lovely to chat to you. Thank you so much.
I know, I really appreciate you having me on today, and I'm absolutely in awe of everything that you do, and you're going to absolutely smash it.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.